This is the FCB Radio Network. Real talk worldwide. Online at FCBRadio.com.
Todd Allen Radio. Turn your speakers up, let's go.
Folks, and welcome. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen, in studio with Ashley Herzog. Ashley, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. I see that you broke the internet once again.
Which time?
Exactly. Exactly. Have our listeners go to your Facebook page, and then they can find out for themselves. Okay. Darvio Kingpin Morrow, how you doing, Darvio?
What's going on, good sir?
I'm well. How you? Your platforms. I mean, the FCB network is doing extremely well, sir. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you, thank you. I appreciate it, sir.
And it's all because of
a lot
Khalid.
Of good things going on.
That's
what Khalid would tell you.
That's right. That's right. Ashley, you have a very, very important guest today. Why don't you go ahead and let's start that interview, Ashley?
All right. A couple weeks ago, I was walking down the street in Bay Village, which is very close to where I live. I live in Avon Lake. And I saw a guy walking. Couldn't really see his face, but I could see that he had like a sandwich board on each side of his body. The front said, "I am not a threat." The back said, "Justice for Floyd, Black Lives Matter." I actually pulled over just to talk to this guy and find out who he was, because I it's not something you see very often in Bay Village. Regardless of how they vote, it's a very conservative town. It's mostly white. A lot of times the people I know there kind of hesitant to get involved in these types of issues. They shy away from controversy. So I wanted to talk to him, and he told me about the Bay Village Anti-Racist Network. It's a newly formed group. It was formed in response to the murder of George Floyd. It was started by a white woman who grew up in Bay Village, and I decided to look into the group, get in touch with them, and see if any of their leaders would come on and talk to us, because we want to know what inspired them to start an anti-racist group in a community like Bay Village. So joining us tonight is Matthew Diemer, and he is from the Bay Village Anti-Racist Action Network. And I just wanted to start by asking, what is your role in the group, and how did you get involved?
First of all, thank you for having me. And so the person that you met walking down the road, his name is Terry Corson. And so to talk about, you know, how I got involved with the group and my role, I have to talk about Terry first. And Terry, you know, after George Floyd, he lives in Bay Village. He lived in Bay Village for 13 years. And after George Floyd, he made his signs. They were out of cardboard first. And then they became a lot more hard, like nice signs, you know, whatever. But he goes out there every day to protest with his Black Lives Matter sign on. That inspired the white woman that you were talking to that helped start the group was my girlfriend's sister and my girlfriend, Liz and Sarah Sweeney, to start the protest or the march for George Floyd in Bay Village. And after that started, we saw that the amount of, you know, need for, you know, more conversation within Bay Village. So that's where the Facebook group came. And I started the Facebook group and started recruiting people. And we are moving over to try to make a more formal group. But it is a way to organize and grab people from Bay Village to start having those difficult conversations about, one, how Bay Village was formed, two, why Bay Village is the way it is, and three, how are we going to make a difference for our community, have diversity in our community, and for the United States of America, or at least just our small town.
Right. My mother grew up in Bay Village. She lived there since the time she was born, actually, on Huntmere and then on Lincoln Road. And I was talking to her tonight and telling her I was doing this interview, and she said, well, I don't think when I was a kid that people purposely kept black people out of Bay Village. And then she backtracked and she said, actually, I don't know. They might have. She said, I if they did, I never heard about it. And I was thinking that's a big part of the problem with white people in the suburbs. They don't know the answer to those questions. They don't know about redlining and housing discrimination. because they haven't had to think about it. It hasn't affected them. So I think a big problem is just a lack of knowledge and a lack of understanding of these issues among a lot of white people. I saw that you guys are doing some work with the school board and within the schools, and I was just wondering if you could tell us about that.
Thank you for the question. So what we did is a group, and we started, with, just a couple, a handful of us, and we are up to 550 people in Bay Village in that group, which hopefully is representative of probably over 1,000 or 1,500 people of Bay Village residents. And we have divided this group into action packs of, different sections of talking to the police, talking to the Board of Education, talking to City Council, which is one of my responsibilities. And also bringing in education. By the way, the Huntsmere is right next to me. I live one street over. But when we're talking about this and redlining and how Bay Village came to be, one of our responsibilities, one of the things I led up on was to bring in a Professor Jason Reese of Ohio State, to come in and talk about redlining, talk about the real estate clauses, to understand how Bay Village became the way it was. I mean, Bay Village had sundown laws. Bay Village did have clauses that said, hey, you cannot resell your house to a black person. We were rated A and B on the rating system that gave loans out for certain neighborhoods and made a class system out of certain neighborhoods. So he came on and told us all about that. And so what we're trying to do is educate as many people as possible about Bay Villages and towns like Bay Village around Northeast Ohio and how they became to be.
Well, real quick, just give, for people who are listening to us outside of our area, just give a little sample of what the town of Bay Village is like, so people can kind of understand exactly where you're talking about.
No worries. And I think that a lot of people who live in Northeast Ohio, these towns are not just to Bay Village. I lived in Chardon and Bainbridge and Auburn and Solon and Twinsburg, and they all are very similar in a couple ways. They're 90 to 95% white. It's a very small, tight-knit community, population of around 17,000 people. And like Ashley said earlier, it's very conservative, and they don't like to talk and take leadership in these sort of conversations because, honestly, they ruffle feathers. It's a town that it has developed in a way. It's a town that developed in a way, and we just need to find the reasons and the causes for it.
Well, just real quick, the Bay Village is in terms of cost of living is 15% higher than the average cost of living in Ohio. The real estate is 63% higher than the average in Ohio, and rental prices are 31% higher than the average in Ohio. So you're really talking about an exclusive type of neighborhood. The school system, of course, is very good, but when you look at the livability index, if you go to areavibes.com, the livability index is a score of 92 out of 100. So you're talking about a suburb which is very, as you said, it's an upper end, high end scale neighborhood, but from what I'm hearing from your conversation, Matthew, is that do you think that a lot of the prejudice that existed in the past in Bay Village still exists today, and therefore you wanted to develop the organization around that?
I think that the prejudice is there today, but in covert forms, not overt forms. And also they are weaved within the system. If you remember, I can't remember the soundbite of somebody, but it was somebody from like the RNC or something. And it was a soundbite of them talking behind the closed doors about how the conversation is changing. And it started out with, the N word, where you just say the N word.
Lee
and then
Atwater.
Talked about taxation. And
that
talked
was
about
Lee
policing.
Atwater.
Thank you very much. So
yes.
So that conversation is 100% still there, that everything is still active there, but the conversation has taken a more covert form. And so, yeah, what we're trying to do is talk about that and get it out in the open in any way we can.
I, as someone who grew up going to school in Bay, living right across the border, I literally live one street into Avon Lake. from Bay Village. I agree with that completely. Nobody says the N-word. People recoil from it. People don't openly say, I don't like black people or I want to discriminate. It is all very subconscious, very subtle. And that's why I'm so glad to see a group like this coming up in a suburb. And you're right, Bay is not unique. This is a problem across all kinds of communities that are 90% to 95% white. And it's good to see you guys taking action. That's why I decided to have you on tonight.
Hey, Matthew.
Well, thank you very much.
Matthew, how can our listeners get in touch with you and follow you if they want to become involved in your cause?
Excellent. Well, you can find me on Facebook. It's Matthew Aaron. That's two A's, A-A-R-O-N. And if you want to just look me up on Facebook, send me a DM. I'll be happy to chat with you and talk to you about the group or direct you in other ways that we can help around Northeast Ohio, because these groups have formed in Rocky River, Westlake, and all kinds of smaller towns around Northeast Ohio, and we're trying to expand this.
Matthew, thank you so much for being on, and we'd like to invite you on again in the future. Folks, you're listening to the Todd Allen Show. We'll be right back.
The Todd Allen Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast, and that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot-button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show. Ashley, how can our listeners follow you?
You can find me on Facebook as Ashley Herzog, on Twitter as Ashley Herzog 85, and also on Instagram as Ashley Herzog 85.
Darvio, how can our listeners follow you?
At D the Kingpin on all social media platforms, DTHEKINGPIN.
And folks, you can follow us here at the Todd Allen Show on all social media platforms. Okay, Ashley, did you happen to see Joe Biden or hear what Joe Biden said today?
Yes, this guy just can't help himself, can he? So he basically said, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, something along the lines of...
Let's go ahead and play the clip.
Biden is clarifying his Thursday comments when he seemed to suggest the black community lacks diversity of thought.
What you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
Okay. Go ahead, Ashley.
I mean, I've tried to like give him the benefit of the doubt, but at this point, I'm going to just say this guy really looks down upon black people. That's there's no other way to explain it.
Yeah. Here's the thing I don't understand. And Dario, maybe you can help me out. A lot of people say that they don't like Donald Trump because they claim that he's racist.
Mm-hmm.
But has he ever said anything like what Joe Biden has been saying past couple days or the few times that he's said things?
Well, here's my thing. I'm not going to get into which one is worse or better, because I think they're both extremely flawed individuals, which is one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to the train wreck that's going to be the debate this fall. It's going to be must-see TV.
Right.
The ratings are going to be through the roof. But, I mean, here's my thing. I was in disbelief when I heard what he said. And I just don't know. At this point, and I said this to one of our colleagues, Kira Davis, on Facebook. I said, you know what? People can vote for whoever they want to, because people come up with their decisions on how they vote for a diverse number of reasons. But nobody can look me in the face and be honest and tell me that that 2020 is not a train wreck. Like, you can't tell me that this election is not a train wreck. I mean, it's unbelievable. You have two gaffe machines.
Yeah.
And Biden, I just can't. What the hell was he thinking?
Well, I can tell you what he was thinking. I mean, let me go into the mind of Joe Biden. Hold on one second. I need the okay, hold on. I mean, ouch. No. Okay. I'm in his mind. Here's what he was thinking. I got the black vote. Why? Because they typically vote monolithically. However, the Hispanic vote is more diverse, right? Because the Hispanic vote doesn't all vote one way like black people do. Black people are going to vote Democratic. They've been voting Democratic ever since Lyndon B. Johnson said he'd have black folks voting for the Democratic Party for the next 100 years. So he doesn't have to work to get the black vote. He can say whatever it is that he wants because in his mind, the black vote is not diverse, meaning that they're not going to separate from the Democratic Party, right, and vote Republican on, for whatever reason. So that's safe. That's in his back pocket. But the Latino vote is something that he has to appeal to because they don't vote in a monolithic block. They're more diverse in terms of the policies that they support and the things in which they go after. I believe that that's what he was thinking, but he was not as eloquent as yours truly is in explaining that.
So let's unpack that. So first of all, there's two mistakes. I think you're probably right in your assessment, Professor.
Well, full disclosure and transparency. That was the mind of Joe Biden. So let me come back. And at this point, I'm exhausted. I don't know if I can finish the show.
So I think you're right. But here, let me just break down the logical flaw in his thinking for him and for anyone who doesn't know this about our community. Number one, there is another option, and that's for black folks to stay home. And we will do that if we don't feel like we have an option. And that is even more dangerous to Biden than black folks voting for Trump. Because the main reason why Hillary Clinton lost in 2016 is because there was a lot of black folks who stayed home. And the percentage of the black vote dropped precipitously in many states. That in and of itself, and as you know, Professor, choosing not to vote is a vote.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So for him, you're right. And he probably thinks the way that he's demonstrated this clearly with the Charlemagne interview and now with this, that he thinks he has black folks in the bag and he can say and do whatever he wants to.
But he does.
But he forgets the fact, no, he doesn't, because black people can stay home. In large numbers, did in 2016.
What I'm saying is that he says whatever he wants to.
Well, yes, absolutely. And here's the issue: you know the guy who gets a little too comfortable, who comes in, you invite him to your house, and he puts his feet on your couch, or he goes into your refrigerator without you inviting him to go into your refrigerator. You come home, and he's drinking your orange juice out of the carton. That's Joe Biden. Like, that's Joe Biden's relationship with black folks. Joe Biden has gotten a bit too comfortable. We let him in our house, but he comes in and puts his feet on our couch. And the other thing that people miss about black folks is, and we, I mean, it would take a whole nother segment to break down why black people vote the way that they do. But the one thing we do not like, the vast majority of us do not like, we don't like anybody to say that we don't have an option if we choose to do something else. Even if we don't, we don't want you to tell us that we don't have an option. You know what I'm saying? Like, you telling black people, well, I got you in the bag. We don't like that. Whether right. they decide to vote for you or not, we don't like you to tell us what we gonna do.
Let me ask you this question, Ashley. If he had said those types of remarks, but he would be referencing the Jewish community, what do you think the backlash would have been?
Oh, I think the backlash would have been swift and immediate, and it would have been organized. People would not say, I feel like Democrats have just gotten to the point where they feel like they can disrespect the hell out of black voters and they will still get the vote. Like, they don't have to work for it anymore. It's you know, owed to them. They really, because they have this white savior complex, as we've talked about on this show.
Right.
They don't have to work for it. And it almost seems to me like they think that black voters like aren't listening to them. Like they aren't paying attention. They're not hearing all these demeaning things that they're saying so they can get away with it. And it's really, I mean, imagine if a Republican talked like this. I mean, you just, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how the media handles this, and we'll see what the black community does with this information. Folks, you're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, 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 what's poppin', what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we ride to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best you can.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Darvio, you have an interesting story about an interesting city.
Yeah, interesting to say the least. This is from the city of East Cleveland, which is a suburb of Cleveland. It's a very downtrodden suburb, has a lot of issues. They have issues with crime and issues with tax base and just everything. It's just a lot of stuff going on, a lot of vacant properties and all that kind of stuff. But it was very interesting to me, and I wanted to bring this up to point out how these cases negatively impact cities, your cities, when they're not taken care of. So this comes from Cleveland.com. And it says, appeals court says East Cleveland police had, quote, unwritten custom of violence and upholds a $50 million verdict for a man beaten and locked in a storage room. So an appeals court on Thursday upheld the $50 million verdict a jury awarded to a man who was beaten by an East Cleveland police detective and locked in a storage room with no food or toilet for 4 days. A unanimous three-judge panel at the 8th District Court of Appeals held that the evidence presented in the case of Arnold Black, quote, demonstrated that the East Cleveland Police Department had an unwritten custom and practice of using violence and arrest to intimidate people. Judge Eileen T. Gallagher authored the 42-page opinion that was joined by Judges Eileen A. Gallagher and Michelle Sheehan. Brothers Robert and Mark DiCello, who filed the lawsuit on behalf of Black, along with attorney Justin Hawal, said the decision is crucial amid the current national conversation about police misconduct and the systems in place to hold officers accountable. Quote, we hope this verdict reminds other departments that there are people out there brave enough to fight for their rights, Bobby DiCello said. East Cleveland Law Director Willa Hemmons was not immediately available for comment Thursday. The opinion lays out an incredible story of a police department mired in abuse based on testimony from the two officers who arrested Black on April 28, 2014. Black, a Cleveland resident, was driving through East Cleveland after visiting his mother when patrolman Jonathan O'Leary pulled him over. Sergeant Randy Hicks, who was off duty, ordered O'Leary to stop Black's truck because it resembled one driven by a drug dealer Hicks was investigating, according to a summary of the evidence in the opinion. O'Leary placed Black in handcuffs and walked him to the back of his truck as Hicks got to the scene in his personal car, flashed his police badge, and started searching Black's truck for drugs. Hicks found no drugs and questioned Black about drug dealers in East Cleveland. Black said he didn't know about drugs, and Hicks punched him in the face, the opinion says. Hicks repeatedly struck Black, who was still in handcuffs, until O'Leary stepped in and stopped Hicks. Both O'Leary and Black testified at trial that Hicks smelled of alcohol. Hicks then ordered O'Leary to take Black to the police station, the opinion says. The officers threw Black into a storage room with a few lockers and cleaning supplies, but no toilet or running water, and was held there for 4 days. Black testified that an officer at some point brought him a carton of milk and allowed him to make a call from a cell phone, and Black called his then-fiancé, the opinion says.
Black also said that then Chief Ralph Spotts came to the storage room with an East Cleveland councilwoman who said she'd heard police had beaten a man and were holding him in a closet and she wanted to check on him, the opinion said. Black suffered headaches and blurred vision for several months after the incident and underwent surgery to remove blood from his brain, according to the opinion. This is insane. This is like, I don't even know. Go ahead, Ashley.
I'm sitting here listening to this, and you got to the part where it said they both testified that so-and-so smelled of alcohol. I thought they were talking about the guy they arrested. No, they were talking about the cop.
Yep.
The cop smelled of alcohol. Like, what is going on there?
This is just, and there's more. I'm just dumbfounded. And it's...
Well, I mean,
that's stuff that goes on in like communist China and Iran, where they lock someone in a cell for 4 days, no toilet, no food.
I mean, East Cleveland is so downtrodden. I mean, those are like the only two police officers they have, aren't they?
You silly. But
and 50 million? That city.
Todd, that's the point I was getting ready to bring up. That's why I wanted to talk about this story in the first place, because I want to talk to the taxpayers in any city who's listening to this show right now to understand why it's important that your police department isn't out there acting a fool. Because guess who's going to have to pay when they do? You,
exactly.
The taxpayer. That's your money. Tell people again that the government doesn't produce anything. The government doesn't make anything. The only money that the government gets comes from who, Todd?
Taxpayers. There's no such thing as a government program. They're taxpayer funded programs.
So guess who's paying? This is why East Cleveland appealed this, because they don't have the money to pay this.
And they lost the appeal.
This is why I think sometimes people don't understand. They don't connect the dots as to why it's important to them. This is why it's important to you.
Is this why the city can't be annexed?
Well, the city's going to have to be annexed at this point.
And who's going to take them?
What Todd is referring to is there was a local debate in the area about the city of Cleveland annexing East Cleveland because of how much East Cleveland is struggling to pay their bills. But now, I mean...
Struggling will be an understatement. Struggling to pay this bill. They can't pay the bill. This one. Oh my goodness.
Check this out. So let me tell you how it got to 50 million. Black sued the department in April 2014. East Cleveland failed to hand over several critical pieces of evidence during the discovery process. So a common pleas court judge barred the city from presenting any evidence in its defense at trial in 2016. A jury awarded Black $22 million. East Cleveland appealed.
Oh my God.
And the 8th District threw out the verdict and ordered the court to hold a second trial where the city was allowed to present evidence. The second trial ended in August with a new jury awarding Black $50
million. Wow.
I mean, I don't know what they should do with East Cleveland. It's obviously so corrupt, it's almost beyond help. Maybe they should annex it and try to salvage.
I have been pro annexation for a very long time, because it gets to a point where East Cleveland is in such a bad shape. They can't fix themselves. Because again, what do we all know, Todd? Any money the government gets comes from the taxpayers. The problem is, they don't have enough. Not only do they not have enough taxpaying citizens, but they don't have enough businesses in that city to pay enough taxes to fund themselves. Ashley, I'm not kidding. It was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, their municipal cell phones were cut off.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
They didn't have enough money to pay their cell phone bill. So now, this is going back to the whole reason why I brought this up, folks. When your local police departments are out here acting a fool, you're going to have to pay the bill, because we have qualified immunity, right? So that means none of that money is coming from directly from the police officers. It's coming from the city.
Right. Tom. I don't know. It's just very.
Oh, go ahead, Ashley.
It's just outrageous. You know, and that that shows that I think a lot of these police officers who are committing these very egregious acts of brutality do it in communities where they feel like the people won't complain or won't fight back.
Where they can
feel
get
like
away
they
with
can get away with it.
No.
And that needs to be put to a stop immediately.
That just has that story just has my blood boiling completely. Go ahead, Todd. We got about a minute left.
The sad thing is too is that the history of East Cleveland. I mean, there was Millionaires Row. You had the Rockefellers.
That was the home of the Rockefellers.
Home of the Rockefellers. At one point in time in the history of the United States, Cleveland and East Cleveland had more millionaires per capita than any other place in the United States.
Yeah.
How far the mighty have fallen. Folks, you're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. We're going to come to one of the segments that is quickly becoming one of my favorite subjects or favorite segments, and that is Herzog's Heat.
All right. This week, and I know this blew up on social media last week, and you know people were it was all fun and games, and people were having a real field day with it. Well, I want to talk about Dr. Stella Emanuel. She is a doctor from Houston, Texas. And she was part of a group of doctors that held a press conference about COVID-19 and hydroxychloroquine, which this doctor is a big proponent of. She's treated hundreds of coronavirus patients in Houston, where there's been a surge going on. And instead of addressing her arguments about coronavirus and about the treatment, social media went crazy over her beliefs. This doctor was born in Africa. She has lived in the U.S. for decades, probably. And she apparently has some spiritual beliefs that a lot of people in the West consider wacky, like believing in demons, believing that certain, you know, having promiscuous sex is bad for your spiritual condition. I'm kind of paraphrasing. But anyway, people went wild over this, saying she's a nutcase, she's a lunatic, who could listen to her? And I just found the whole thing to be, it just smelled like racism to me. If Republicans did this with an African-born doctor who was on the other side, or seen as, see, this is the problem too. COVID has been so politicized. It shouldn't even be a right versus left issue. But if a doctor had gotten up and said, no, Trump is absolutely wrong, hydroxychloroquine does not work, and it came out that this person also had these same beliefs and Republicans attacked the doctor, we would like never hear the end of it. We would still be getting lectures about, you know, cultural imperialism and imposing our Eurocentric views on the rest of the world. And that's what I wanted to talk about for my segment tonight.
Yeah, that I think you did a very good job of putting that in the Facebook, because, you know, we are, a lot of people think that we are a melting pot. They say the United States is a melting pot, but I think we're more of a salad bowl. And the reason I say it is because, you know, you have your onions on one part of the bowl, you have your lettuce, you have your tomatoes, you have all these different kinds of things. But a melting pot means that we all become homogenous. But one of the beauties of having being a salad bowl is that you have these different parts of the salad, which completely makes up the meal. I think that regardless of her religious ideologies or her personal beliefs in terms of spiritualism, the fact is that she passed the board exams, and she's a doctor. She's a medical doctor. She can actually see patients. She subscribes medications, and she has saved countless lives, according to her, according to what she's done with her patients. I think she said 350 patients that she's actually given this protocol to. I think that people, it's called a fallacy of argument, that if you don't like what someone says, what you try to do is you try to attack their character. And both sides do it. Donald Trump calls Joe Biden Sleepy Joe. People would have called Donald Trump a liar, or they'll call him a racist. They'll do all these things to attack a person's character. But as you so eloquently said, they're not attacking the issue of what she said.
No, they're not addressing what she said at all. They're just saying, well, this person's obviously nuts because she believes in demons. Which, yeah, honestly, if you're a practicing Christian, probably believe in the devil and Satan and that kind of thing. If you're practicing and not just a Christian in name only, it's really not that unusual or outlandish of a belief. Most cultures have some kind of idea of evil, angels and demons. We always have. It sounds weird to us because it's a different culture and it's not the narrative that we're used to. I'm just amazed that the people on the left are so like blind to their own ignorance. This kind of stuff, they're so eager to call it out when anyone else does it, but they don't even see it in themselves.
Right. Darvio, your response?
Yeah, you know, when Ashley made that post, I had responded and I told her, you know, I was starting to think the same way because it wasn't, and it's not necessarily whether I agree or disagree with what she said, but if it started to feel like people were going a little overboard in their criticism of her. You know what I mean? Where it crossed that line where it's like, okay, now you're just dunking on her and calling her a witch doctor and all of that kind of
stuff.
Exactly.
They're really like getting into the witch doctor stereotype, which is very dehumanizing, ugly.
Right.
Yeah, it's bigoted, very much so.
And it's kind of interesting that, you know, if it doesn't impact them directly, they want to basically name call. And this just brings to mind, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of a gentleman during the Liberian Civil War. He called himself General Butt Naked. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Well, again, this person, again, this talks about how people can be critical of a person's values and beliefs until it comes close to them. This guy believed that if he would go into battle without clothes on, okay, that he would be impossible for him to be killed. Okay. Mm-hmm. This was part of his religious beliefs. He believed in a lot of the different things, wacky things that we say wacky, but a lot of people just wouldn't believe in. But he actually went into battle without clothes on. But this guy, this one person, is attributed to killing 20,000 people himself.
Wow.
So the point I'm trying to make is this. If you have COVID, and if this is the doctor that you would have to see, you really wouldn't be worried about what her belief system is if she could perform the duty at hand, and that would be to help you to survive.
Yeah, there's no evidence that her ability to practice medicine is somehow impaired or hindered by any of these beliefs.
Exactly. Just as if you ran into General Butt Naked in a battle and you want to laugh the fact that he doesn't have any clothes on, right? But if he was standing next to you and your health record could be ruined, you'd have a different approach to things. So, you know, we've got to stop being so judgmental of people. And don't judge people by maybe what their personal beliefs are, but look at what they can actually do from their professional perspective. Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Todd Allen Radio. Sit back, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, folks, to the second hour of the Todd Allen Show. Thank you for listening. In studio with Ashley Herzog. Ashley, how are you?
I'm good.
Darvio Kingpin Morrow.
Yes, sir.
And we're getting right into this new segment we call Rapid Fire. Okay, you know, you're seeing a lot of news articles that are coming out about a possible vaccine. I know that when I'm watching world news and other places, parts of the world, they're talking about that as having possibly being coming up in the fall. or the fall or early winter. If there were a vaccine, would you take it, Ashley?
Yes, I would take it.
Darvio?
Not right away.
Yeah.
I'll let everybody else take it first.
Yeah.
And if y'all, long as y'all arms don't fall off, or y'all don't start growing 15 toes or something, if everything is okay, then I'll take it.
Yeah, I would treat it like the new Xbox. I'm going to wait till it goes through a couple of iterations before I take it. You know? I'm not going to get it right away. The price is going to have to come down a little bit.
Man, listen. I would take it, but not. I ain't going to be in that first batch.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting that Donald Trump said that he doesn't think – he thinks that it should be voluntary. A lot of people – others are saying that if there is a vaccine that it should be mandatory, but our president is saying that he thinks it should be up to individuals. They should be, you know, whether or not they want to take the vaccine. Kind of interesting that if you look at the flu vaccine, 49% of people who took flu vaccine, a lot of them still, you know, succumb to the flu. So there's, it's not 100%, certainly not 100%. So moving along, the new videos are out regarding George Floyd and what his state was, his mental state, his physical state was prior to the police officer, kneeling on his neck. Did you see the video, Darvio? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I did. It was very, very hard to watch. It made me angry. It pissed me off all over again. And to me, it reinforced how negative this whole thing was. They came guns drawn for a counterfeit $20 bill. I had a buddy of mine who is not only ex-military, but ex-military police specifically. And that was one of the things he said, that he was like, I hope they all go to prison, because they immediately, once you go into a situation with your gun out, there is no other way to go down. You know what I mean? Like, you've already taken it there.
Yeah.
And for a counterfeit $20 bill, man, that was just, and when you have a guy who tells you he's afraid, you know what I mean? Tells you that he has a fear and he's begging, you know, don't kill me, don't kill me. And you have guns drawn for a counterfeit 20, man. It's just ridiculous to me. I'm looking for the comment that my buddy said. This is what he said. This is so bad to just walk up on a dude and to pull your gun when you're not dealing with a felony stop is terrible. And I hope all of them go to prison. That's an ex-military police officer who said that.
Ashley, did you see it, and what are your thoughts?
I did not see it yet, but I agree with everything that's been said so far. George Floyd was, I don't remember if it was $10 or $20. He was basically murdered over $20 at a max. And that is what people are so upset about. You know, people keep trying to downplay it by saying, oh, he was a drug addict. That doesn't matter. The police didn't know any of that when they showed up. All they saw was, a black guy who had been accused of using a counterfeit bill. And to do what there's no excuse for it. There's no way to call it anything but murder, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, Ann Coulter's on Twitter saying it wasn't a murder and that's not how he died, and I think she's just, I don't know, voting misinformation, because there's no doubt that he was killed by having this cop kneel on his neck, and there was absolutely no reason to do it like that. He was already handcuffed,
yes he was.
Well, when I saw the video, I think that the quote, the racial issue was probably is going to be brought into question, because yes, we saw that the body cam footage shows that the guns were drawn because they were asking for him to show his hands. Once he did show his hands and they saw that he did not have a weapon, the guns were put away. I also saw that the I don't think that they were manhandling as much as said that he was. They said that he was initially. I thought that, you know, some of the conversations that if you listen to it were pretty interesting. The fact is that I'm not saying that he should have been handled the way that he was. The fact is that with the knee on the neck, is definitely not a good look in the way, the cavalier way in which they did it. This man should not have been killed the way that he was. He shouldn't have been killed at all. But I think that the video kind of brings into question the whole racist or racial issue. Murder, I don't think that it was premeditated or malice aforethought. Manslaughter, probably. But we could talk more about this on the other side. Folks, you're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast, and that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Ashley, how can our listeners follow you?
You can find me on Facebook as myself, Ashley Herzog. On Twitter as Ashley Herzog 85. And also on Instagram as Ashley Herzog 85.
Darvio.
At Diva King. We've been on all social media platforms, DTHEKINGPIN.
And folks, you can listen to The Todd Allen Show on all social media formats, TODDALLYN Show. Okay, I'm going to go right back to you, Darvio, because I know that you have some additional things you'd like to discuss with the George Floyd video.
Yes, I do, because I disagree with about 80% of the things that you just said. So,
well, first, let me ask you this. Did we see the same video?
Yes, we saw the same video.
Okay.
We saw the same video.
Okay, very good.
I disagree with about 70 to 80% of what you just said.
Let's just go now, by point. What would you disagree?
Well, first of all, when you talked about them drawing their guns, they drew their guns until they saw that he didn't have a weapon, then they put their guns away. Like my ex-military police friend said, they shouldn't have had their guns drawn in the first place for a stop that was not a felony stop.
Well, they shouldn't.
So first and foremost, let's start there.
Well, when they
had their guns drawn in the first place.
When they ask to see his hands and he's not showing his hands, then they can pull weapons because they're asking to see hands.
They had the weapons drawn in the first place, though.
Well, you're seeing one of the body cam. You're not seeing the body cam of the gentleman who actually opened the door. You're seeing one of the backup police officers. So if he says, let me see your hands, and that's what they see, and they keep saying that, and now he has a weapon drawn. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is this. We don't see everything from beginning to end, so we have to infer what took place. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? We don't know.
They shouldn't have had their guns drawn on something that they knew was not a felony stop. That comes from an ex-cop who's seen
10 seconds of video. It's not going to hold up in court.
He saw the same video we did.
Exactly.
That's number one.
The point I'm trying to make is he's inferring. He's inferring what the whole situation was.
I understand, which is the same thing the jury's going to have to do, right? So what point does that prove? That's the same thing the jury's going to have to do.
The jury is going to get additional information in court that we're not going to get in the public opinion. So that's with any case on anything. Okay, next point.
So the next point. So first of all, moving away from that first point.
Okay.
The second point is, depending on the state, you don't have to have malice aforethought in order to be charged with murder. We had this very same discussion with Ahmaud Arbery.
Is Minnesota a malice aforethought state?
That I don't know. But they are charged. That cop was charged with murder.
I think there was malice.
Once somebody tells you, and that's a whole nother point, Ashley. He clearly demonstrated, I can't breathe.
I think there was absolutely malice going on. I think he was trying to put on a show because he didn't like people filming him on cell phones.
Absolutely.
But he's trying to prove a big point. I think there was malice.
Absolutely. And I think you can, a good lawyer can prove that in court. I mean, you see it. We all see it. The thing that irritates me about a lot of these cases is sometimes people want us to not believe our, quote, lying eyes, right? Like, right. We're looking at what they're doing. We're seeing it right in our faces for everybody to see.
There's a couple things, because the prosecutor had this video, and this video was leaked. And the prosecutor stated the reason why he did not release this tape initially is because he wanted to guarantee a conviction. So he knew that this could throw doubt into the case with what they were charging them with. That came out of the prosecutor's mouth. So what happens in many instances, I believe, and I may be wrong, is that we have already had the narrative of what happened without this video. And so now when we see this video, in many instances, we subconsciously try to fit this video into our narrative that we already have to prove that we were right.
Yeah, I think there's some of that going on.
That's all I'm saying.
I think there is.
On both sides.
I'm not denying that.
Absolutely.
I'm not denying that.
On both sides.
I'm not denying that. I'm just simply saying that I'm not saying that we're seeing with our lying eyes. What I'm saying is that we're trying to match what we see. We're not looking at it objectively. We're looking at it to fit our narrative. Just like your friend may have said, well, they shouldn't have came up there with this. Wait. We don't know. No.
Well, and this is a guy who knows those policies and procedures.
Because he's a military police officer. So UCMNJ is different than the policies of the state of Minnesota may be, or what may be a police officer, local police. UCMJ is different. It's very different.
Most of the time they're more professional. But anyway, continue.
The Uniform Code of Military Justice is very different, and it's a lot stricter. You're correct. Okay. So again, not knowing, I'm not saying he's right. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just simply saying I don't know.
Oh, I'm saying he's wrong as hell. Like I don't have to he wrong as hell. So flat out. So what is he being charged with again? Is it first degree or second degree? I think it's second degree, wasn't it?
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. So when you're charged with a lesser degree, first of all, when you're charged with a lesser degree of murder, the burden of proof isn't as high anyway, which is why it was smart in that regard for them to charge him with either second degree murder or whatever it is. And the thing about that is depending on the state, in some cases, second or third degree murder is the equivalent of a manslaughter charge anyway somewhere else. They just use the term murder. So just like when we were talking about in the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia, you can be charged with murder if you kill somebody on accident. You know what I mean? The Georgia law does not differentiate between what was malice aforethought and what wasn't. Murder was murder. It just differentiates on the degrees based off of malice.
Yeah, he was charged with second degree murder, and the three other officers on the scene during the killing were charged with aiding and abetting second degree murder. So here's the thing: I'm not saying that he wasn't murdered. I'm not denying that at all. My question is the racist aspect of it. Okay.
Well, let's talk about that.
That comes into question because again, you and I have had this conversation before. I have a problem with labeling someone a racist anyway, because to me, when I have the definition of racist, it means that you believe that your color of your skin or the race that you identify with is superior than any other race. That's racism to me. I do believe that we all have prejudgments or prejudice, right? So we may not believe that our race is superior than everybody, but we can have prejudice against groups of people or things. We can have prejudgments. And so I'm more along the lines of prejudice as opposed to something
racist. We have less than a minute left, so I really don't have enough time to devour that as much as I would like to. But for me, man, if we're talking about do any of us in the rooms that we're in, any of us think Do any of us think that situation would have played out the exact same way if George Floyd was white?
No.
I don't.
Well,
if it was let's say it was like a, and I know white people have been brutalized by the police too, but no, I think if you had a like young white man who was caught shoplifting or, you know, something similar to what George Floyd did, no, that would not have happened.
Well, are more white men killed by police than black?
That's because there's more white people in the country, Todd.
Not
but
by
no,
percentage of population. No.
We gotta go to break. Okay. We gotta go to break.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
Yo, 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 what's poppin'? It is your friendly neighborhood Simba, Aaron Malik, here to remind you guys to go stream my new single, Tempo, on all streaming platforms. Yes, all of them. YouTube, SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, all that. I greatly appreciate it. Love you guys.
We rock, we roll, we ride to the tempo.
The dance floor where we come alive. Let loose through your limbs, how you feel inside. Mama, take my hand, show me the best you can.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. I don't know how I should feel about opening up schools. What are your thoughts, Darby, about opening up schools? Do you think we should or shouldn't?
I have mixed feelings about it. It's tough. Well, I'll put it like this. I have a couple of caveats. Like, if you're not going, you can't simultaneously say, we're going to kick people off of unemployment and send them back to work. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're not going to open the schools. Like, you can't do both, because right. Then what ends up happening is you have a bunch of people who don't have a way to be able to make sure their kids are taken care of with.
Right.
Because daycare, talking to a lot of my friends, particularly Jessica Lavish, the co-host of my show, I didn't realize how expensive daycare is.
Very.
Yeah. Like, daycare is very expensive. So if you're going to send people back to work, if you're going to make them go back to work while we're still in the middle of this, then I don't see how you can open up schools. But then on the flip side, though, not only people talking about keeping schools closed, they're talking about not doing extracurricular activities, which I think is very, very unhelpful, particularly for black kids, for inner city kids who need that outlet. You know what I mean? It's just not doing sports, I think, is a bad idea. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I think there's a couple of different issues with it, one way or the other.
Let me ask the only mother on our show. Ashley, what are your thoughts about kids going back to school?
I have mixed feelings about it. I agree that you cannot expect people to work but have their kids at home. You can't expect them to be homeschooling all day and working all day. It's not going to – won't happen. And they've said that virtual learning or this, you know, remote learning has already been a total failure in low-income communities.
Yeah.
You have people that – only have internet on their phone. You can't sit there all day long, you know, trying to do homework on a phone. They don't have, their libraries are closed, so they can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to be mindful of that. What if people are going back to work, what are we going to do with all these kids?
Yeah.
They aren't going to be in school. At the same time, I feel like the teachers' unions are the ones pushing for them not to go back to school. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at the teachers' best interests, not the children.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also see how it could be kind of an exercise in futility to open the schools, where if one person tests positive, are they going to have to shut down the school for 2 weeks?
Anyway.
If they're going to do that, they might as well not bother, because there's going to be COVID cases. And if they're going to have to shut down and sanitize and you know, clean from head to toe every time someone gets COVID, you know, I it doesn't make sense from a practical standpoint.
The only other
thing I'm concerned about is I think having a teacher or a classmate or classmate's parent die from coronavirus within the school, it could be very traumatic to kids. It's
That's a very good point.
Shield them from that when they're not in school. Yeah. But if they're, you know, go back in September and then all of a sudden, Mrs. Smith dies and they have to explain to the class that she died from this disease that she picked up at school, I think that is not good for children's psyches.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree. That's a very good point. And just real quick, Todd, I just wanted to make a point quickly about one of the things that Ashley was pointing out. What you said earlier about the issues with remote learning, particularly with lower income, that's basically what they call the digital divide. So it's reinforcing some of the issues that we already have, where you have people in low income communities who don't have access to the internet like everyone else does, or they only have access to it on your phone, which is not enough to do a whole school program, whole school lesson plans and homework and all that kind of stuff. So I think, again, this is another thing that kind of reinforces some of these issues that people are talking about. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up as well. I mean, people at the margins of the social determinants are the ones who are at the most risk. I mean, when you look at the last school year, which was pretty much a wash from March up until now, these students have lost, they're going to lose an entire year of academics.
Basically.
And if you're already from school systems which are failing, it becomes a very slippery slope. You actually see some suburban communities in and around Cleveland now who the parents are protesting because they want the athletics to continue. Because some of these students are saying, well, I need this athletic year because I'm trying to get a scholarship to go to school. Non-contact sports such as golf, which, I mean, golf is a great scholarship, by the way, especially a caddy. When you have these types of sports, which can go, those typically are sports where if you're looking at low-income communities, they don't have golf clubs or they don't have golf teams. Right.
No, because as you know, golf as a sport is very expensive, particularly at a younger age.
Yeah, especially if you can't hit like me, you can't hit it straight. You're off in the woods somewhere, and those golf balls aren't cheap, you know.
Right.
So this is a very it's a very interesting time, because on one hand, this has changed lives dramatically, and many people, it may take years for them to come out of this what this has done to their families, what this has done to them financially. But this can also be a time of renewal, if you will, that if people start to think about what's really important and focus on family and focus on friendships and relationships. And, as we demonstrated here on the Todd Allen Show, you know, you're not always going to agree with your friends. But one thing that you can always do is that you can show your friends respect and show your friends love, because you may not agree with the subject, but if you have a love for your family and your friends, then that transforms everything. And I think that a lot of times we focus on the negative in our society. We focus on things which we don't think that are right, and we want those things corrected. But in this instance, we know students need to have education, but at the same time, how do you provide them with an education but keep them physically safe as well? That is a balancing act that when no one has the answers, it becomes very difficult, and it becomes very, very angering. I don't know. My son is in school in Columbia from 6:30 to 3:30, 6:30 in the morning to 2:30, and it's all online. I don't know. People here, if they were online that long, I mean, I don't think that they would that would bode well. I don't know. How would you do an online? Well, your class was online, Darvio, so you're a master of the online universe, aren't you?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it at all.
my degree from Liberty I received online. So I didn't have a problem with online courses at all, but not only does it take a certain level of discipline to be able to do it, but you have to have the resources to be able to do it. Like you got to have good internet. You know what I mean? You have to have like not just internet, but good internet. Internet that
you can't have dial up. You can't have dial up.
I don't think anybody has dial up anymore, Todd.
But I mean, you have to have a laptop or desktop. Yes. You can't just have a tablet or a phone. I think correct. That's a big issue too.
Correct. Absolutely. So like I said, Ashley, all the stuff that you're talking about is directly related to what people call the digital divide, which is something right. that, you know, we still think of the internet as a luxury item or as a something that you just choose to get. But in many cases, especially now in COVID, the internet has almost become a utility. Like you have to have it. And if right. you're going to go all virtual, you definitely have to have the internet.
Yeah. Good point. Excellent. Folks, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks, to listening to the Todd Allen Show, one of our favorite segments, You Big Dummy.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y.
Stupid!
The reason that bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
You big dummy.
Okay. So, you know, sometimes, well, a lot of times, people do things and they get into issues with the police and they want to run away. They want to get away, right? Ashley, normally, like, you hear people try to get away, but they try to run away from the police, or they get into a car, get into a high-speed chase, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Normally, you don't hear about someone trying to do gymnastics to get away from the police.
Gymnastics?
So, this is what I mean. From Fox 13 in Tampa Bay, good old Florida. A 40-year-old man who was allegedly blocking traffic in Orlando, Florida, by doing gymnastics in the road, was caught on video on Tuesday, July 21st, attempting to evade arrest by cartwheeling away from the police. This video, which is go to fox13news.com and look it up. This video shared by Oliver Francois shows the man in the path of a truck at a Wawa in Orlando. At one point, the man lies down in the middle of the roadway. Orange County Sheriff Department's officers attempt to detain the man, who frees himself, performs another cartwheel, and then is again detained by police. According to the sheriff's office, the gymnast, Gianfranco Fernandez, was charged with battery on a law enforcement officer, that's kind of ridiculous, and resisting arrest.
Cartwheeling away and battery on an officer?
That's... Kids, I think that's called overcharging.
Yeah, that's called piling on. Yeah.
Now, what he did was stupid. I mean, right. Gianfranco Fernandez, you are the big dummy of the week. But battery on a law enforcement, come on.
Yeah, that's right, over right.
The yeah, that was, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a twofer.
I didn't see that part until I just read it. Battery on a police officer. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah, they really have a loose definition of battery.
Yes. Have you ever seen some of the charges in Florida? Like, they have some of the most ridiculous charges I've ever seen. And I know this from doing a
from doing all of the stupid Florida stories that I do. I'm just battery on a police. Ashley, what is the, what could be the logic? Where did the battery come from? Did he like accidentally kick him when he did the cartwheel?
I don't know. Some guy, I think it was in West Virginia, actually was charged with assault on an officer for farting at a cop. So they have a very, very loose definition of battery. Apparently doesn't Good even have Lord. To involve physical touching. So
that's outrageous. That's outrageous.
Yeah, it's beyond outrageous. I mean, is it ridiculous to do it? Yes. But I mean, should you be charged with assault?
With assault, like, come on, man. So
that
so
would the never cops... happen with civilians. Like, if one, you know, one person did it to another and called the police over it with no cops involved, I mean, they wouldn't show up for that.
You would not be able to go to the police and say, this person farted on me. I want you to arrest them with assault.
Ridiculous. No, it's only for police.
Well, no, that wouldn't, that, no, they wouldn't be, it wouldn't be farting on the police. It'd be trying to gas a police officer.
Yeah, it'd be something ridiculous like that.
Something outrageous. I just, right. I couldn't believe that. I didn't see that part of the story.
You're welcome.
Until I read it live.
You're welcome.
And what are you, you're welcoming me for?
Well, I
you didn't give me that story.
I brought that aspect up. I was like,
well, when I read it, and he was charged with battery on a law enforcement officer, I'm like, what?
Right.
Like, that just completely hijacked my story. Well, because I'm like, what the hell?
It depended on the fitness level of the police officer as he was chasing him as the guy cartwheeled away. if he was
cartwheeling, how the hell fast could he actually go?
This, you know, we don't always know the fitness. I've seen some police officers, and I've seen how much girth comes over their utility belt. Some of them, not all of them. So
I'm looking at the. I guess somebody recorded this. So I'm looking at the video. That of course they got a 15-second commercial. All right, here we go. So. he wasn't even doing a fast cartwheel. Like, it was like, Ashley, you ever been around like your friend who had a little bit too much to drink and they started doing like little silly slow motion dances?
Yes.
That's basically what this dude was doing. This cartwheel.
Ridiculous.
This is the slowest cartwheel. Oh, and then he did a cartwheel and then did the sign of a cross.
Oh, wow.
And then he laid in the middle of the street. Oh, my goodness. That is...
Florida.
That is Florida. So he got away. He got away, and then he did the cartwheel. You guys have to watch the video. Go to fox13news.com and watch this damn video. You have to see it. This is amazing.
Thank you for and even after
watching the video, y'all, that charge is still, I didn't see anything that justified that charge.
Yeah.
Incredible. Ashley, any last words for our audience?
Just cooperate with the police. I mean, don't start doing cartwheels or dancing or, you know, doing an interpretive dance or miming. I don't know. Just don't do it.
Darvio, last words.
Probably not a good idea to lay in the middle of the street if you're trying to get away from the police.
And my last words, I want to thank our guest, Matthew Aaron, to be on our show today. I also want to thank you, our listeners, for listening to us and supporting us here at the Todd Allen Show. We'd ask that you continue to support us again and again, and we really appreciate it. And remember, folks, we are what we continually do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. Until next time, you're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.